Council Member Jackson. This is Wendy, and this is a test. We want to make sure we can hear you and you can hear us.
Hi, Wendy. I can hear you.
Yay, we can hear you too. This is fantastic. Thank you for joining us.
Great, thanks.
Hurry.
You ready? Okay, let's get started. I'd like to welcome everyone to the City Council work session for August 6, 2024. And our first item is update on the Eaglewood Golf Course. Tyler?
Mayor and Council, thank you. I'll try to be as quick and brief on this as possible, so we can get to answer some of your questions you might have. Of course. Sorry, Wendy. I want to kind of give you a big overview of some big projects that are coming down the pipeline. And when you see these numbers, I don't want you to feel sticker shock. A lot of these are out 10, 15, 20, years or more, but really want to get them in front of you so as these years go by, we can find some funding for them. We'll talk a little bit about some capital funds and go from there. So these are kind of some high-level projects that I foresee on the golf course side, and I've kind of oriented them in a timeline, so kind of more in the front of our minds at the top, and then as you get down the list, those are farther out. So for example, we'll spend a lot of our time today talking about this driving range structure proposal I have, and then some tee boxes, an ancillary storage building for maintenance, some on-course lighting, down so forth. The biggest ticket items are going to be an irrigation replacement. I think Mayor and Lisa may remember 4 or 5 years ago we had a analysis of our current system. At that time being almost 25 years old, we come to find out it's still in really good shape. So what we may have thought was a 5 or 6 year project coming up maybe 2 or 3 years from now, we're ultimately going to get maybe another 10 or 15 years out of our current system. So with that said, it still is coming, and it will be needed a replacement at some point. PVC in the ground and rocks and debris going through those pipes only do so much for so long. So that's kind of the next biggest thing. We have some bigger ideas for a practice area on the back of the range, partnering with the First Tee of Utah as a nonprofit organization for some academy and teaching after school programs. And then, even though we just did it, 2 years ago. Some additional building renovation, and I put a high number on there. And then that one's farther out. That one's probably 20, 25 years from now when we look at refinishing the outside, or just like you would your home or any other property throughout that time. So,
Tyler, where would the practice area short course be, and where would the academy building be?
So we've looked at the back of the driving range. If you're kind of visualizing where the fireworks are at, there's kind of that section between the driving range and number two that's really just native grass right now. We have our native, nursery green out there right now. So when we do have damages on the greens, that's where we pull from. So it'd be kind of in that back south section of the driving range. And I don't know if I have a map visual of when we talk about driving range, I might be able to point that out to you. There's about 65,000 square feet, which is a small area for a large practice area. So this would be a small one with probably three greens, enough for 20 to 30 kids or adults or clinics to kind of hit and practice back there at one time. We could use it as a little short par three course with 20 to 30 yard shots too. The reason that one's after the irrigation replacement is that would have to be, we could do it outside of it, but it would be beneficial and cost savings to do the irrigation around when we do the full replacement to include some of these smaller sections that you would for the short course anyways.
And the academy building?
So Ken actually proposed kind of just off to the west side of the clubhouse. Originally, we were looking at that same area on the back of the range, but may look at that lower parking lot and utilizing some of that space and putting a small building there. That's our biggest challenge at Eaglewood, is we don't have a lot of space. So trying to fit in these programs and these ancillary projects into what we have, we really have to be creative on where we're going to put them and how. And biggest thing is where's power and where's water and how much is it going to cost to get it where we want to put it. So,
and okay. Are you going to talk to the driving range structure tonight?
Yes, that will be the majority of the project. So what I have highlighted on here is the next slide. So when we originally borrowed for the bond for the clubhouse, it was $4.25 million. We have some funds left over to use for projects on the golf course. And what we have left is me proposing this driving range structure. So a little over $375,000 is what we have left. And what I've kind of budgeted and what quotes and things I've got kind of fall under that. So I'll kind of dive into what the breakdown on that is. This is an overall summary of what the bond has gone towards. So we look at the clubhouse, which includes a lot of the kitchen remodel, the exterior landscaping, everything that we changed and altered on the clubhouse. We did swap out our old irrigation controllers, which again, those are actually going to help us get those extra years on our current irrigation system. We did some tee boxes on-course renovations for the bathrooms. We refinished the cart paths, some furniture for the deck, for the event center, and then some landscaping and lighting outside as well. So that brings us to that number nine, the orange item with the driving range structure. We kind of, Weston and I and some of my other staff kind of ran through a lot of wishes and wants and needs and thoughts of how we could potentially improve Eaglewood with these funds. And ultimately, I'm kind of pushing for something that will bring us some return on that investment, so increasing some revenue down the line. This just gives you an idea how busy the driving range is. So if any of you have been up there and can visualize it, we have a grass range right now with a small pad on the back. We have artificial grass. And we rotate those golfers from front to back on this grass, and we're spending a lot of hours and materials to get that grass to grow in between how busy we are. If you look 4 or 5 years ago, let's say fiscal year 19, where we made $54,000 on the driving range, It wasn't utilized to its full extent. We weren't having an issue of trying to keep the grass green and growing so people could hit it off of. And now you look at this last fiscal year when we're making $154,000, the driving range is packed almost every day, all day. And we're luckily we have that pad on the back with artificial turf, or else we would be hitting off of dirt, which will hurt our revenue even more. So I put this on here, and I bring that up is to say that we can't necessarily get any busier on a grass range with the time we have and to have a good product. So we have to either increase rates, which we did in July, which will help, hopefully. It really hasn't shown that. We've gotten busier. But hopefully that will show a less of an impact on the grass. So that's one option. Another one is to increase the time that we're on the artificial mats to help the grass grow. And the third option, which I'm proposing, is we build a more permanent structure that we have off of the artificial turf 90 to 95% of the time. The structure itself, and if you have any questions as we're going, please stop me and ask here. The structure that I'm looking at would take up where these red squares are. So there really be two structures in the way that the driving range is oriented. It's really a dog leg to the right into the heel. So oriented that to kind of keep the left side of the driving range from hitting it over into number 9 and more centered on the driving range. It'd be 124 on one end and then 80 on the other with 204 feet total. And that in the red would be a concrete pad. And I'll show you pictures of the structure. That takes up a fourth of the hitting area that we currently have. So we would still have grass area available. For example, if we had a tournament that wanted to hit off of grass rather than hitting off the mats, which we'll get into. I don't know if we needed to or not. Visitor. But that's kind of the space where it will go. The covered driving range project, I think, gives us a lot of benefits. And as we get through it, I want you to kind of visualize a kind of a Top Golf, if you've been there, or kind of a computerized operation within that covered structure. And that's the TrackMan's lower on the list. I'll show you some pictures of that as well. We create more of a structure for storage for the driving range material. So we'll have a spot. Right now we don't have a spot for our ball washer for the driving range balls. They're all in different places. So this would kind of combine the dispensing of range balls with where we're cleaning them. So we're a lot more organized there as well. And I won't go through every bullet point, but the biggest one on there, and I think what really hammers this operation of building this cover structure, is having some lighting that will increase our operating hours, as well as in the kind of off-peak season from March, April, even in some May, September, October days. Rather than closing down when it's dark, we'll have a couple extra, 2, 3, or even 4 extra hours of operation, which again is more revenue and more people coming to the driving range.
So I assume the lighting would be directed so that the homes there wouldn't be
Yeah, and
impacted.
I have a little diagram that will show our best attempts to not have any light. They're going to be visible, but not visible in a way that the light is aimed at their homes. So I think I haven't got the lighting design back from the group that I've reached out to yet, but I have a pretty good idea of lighting needs and where we would need to put them. So,
Tyler, I'm going to commit heresy here, golf heresy. But I said to you one time, I just played in a tournament and I hit practice balls off of artificial turf, and you cringed and said, that's horrible, you know. Tell me why again, because it seemed I thought it was a great idea. Like, oh yeah, this turf never wears out.
So it took me about 4 months to get over proposing this project on artificial turf. They have a program in the TrackMan that you can use the grass, real grass, to still use this TrackMan program. It's not as good. It's not as intuitive. My own personal thoughts, and many golfers, are that it's nicer and you get a better feedback hitting off of grass. It's actually easier to hit a golf ball off of artificial turf than it is to hit in grass. The golf club kind of bounces off of that turf more so than it does grass. Grass will kind of tend to dig and your club may go into it more. It's more of a traditional thing. It's the same feeling that some have of using a wooden tee over a plastic tee. There's some traditionalists out there that refuse to buy the plastic tees to put their golf ball in the tee box. And the reason it took me that long to get over it is because I'm more of a traditionalist and I like to hit off of grass. But taking a step back and looking at where the operation is and where we can go, I think having an all-in perspective on what our driving range could be and what Eaglewood can be, this gives us a little bit better visibility and different clientele and a different customer that offsets some of those traditionalists that are still coming to play. I think they still will come hit this because we're giving them something appealing with the TrackMan and the data and the functions that they get with that that I think overshadow hitting off of the turf. Okay. So, sorry, that was kind of a long answer to your question, but there's a lot of caveats to that and notes within it. This would be the east structure. So these columns are spread out every 20 feet, so there would be two bays underneath each column. And if you're looking lower on the picture, you can kind of see a little bit of an overhang. That would be out kind of where the golfers are hitting. So they wouldn't be underneath the structure. They would kind of be out just a little bit from it, but still be in the shaded area. And then this is the smaller 80-foot structure. It's the same other than we have that left 20 feet is storage. Like I mentioned earlier, we have all of our driving range materials, so the ball dispenser would be in this covered area. The TrackMan system needs a climate-cooled server room, so this would house that as well. Storage for furniture, golf balls, range balls, everything would kind of combine into there in one place. It would be convenient for staff. This kind of gives you a visual of what it may look like on the driving range. Right now we're looking at white. They offer different colors, different options, different painting. The biggest thing is the roof. It's all galvanized material, so you can either paint it or galvanize it, but you can't paint it after you galvanize it or else the paint will just peel and options. So there's some color options there, but I think white would be the easiest to keep clean and spray off and not be so hot out in the summer days. So I have some other pictures too. You might see this is that TrackMan system, that little monitor to the right of the gentleman in the white. It gives them data from what they're hitting. They can play games. They can play contests with other people. As a golf course, we can operate contests throughout the entire month. So everyone that comes and logs in on this system, think of it almost like a worldwide program. Everyone that comes and plays can be a part of that competition for the month, and at the end of the month we can reward some prizes and do a lot of fun kind of marketing to get people to come play for Eaglewood, come hit range balls on the TrackMan system. A couple more kind of down the line. You can see some heaters in this one. I wouldn't go quite this far with the furniture, but we would have some seating area, some lounge area kind of on the back for people to to sit and eat at and to kind of congregate in between their bays. And now we get into lighting. Any questions on any of
those? You can do this for $375?
I hope. So I've gotten the bigger item quotes. So the structure, concrete, the biggest thing I think are going to be question marks is getting power out to the facility. Right now we don't have enough power on the driving range to facilitate everything. We're working on getting some of those bids. The golf course, myself and our maintenance crew would cover a lot of the prep costs to trench and get them up there. But again, I haven't gotten final quotes. I have some estimates of where I think we'll be at, but the structure itself, and I'll show you a detailed, was about $140,000 for them to build and install. I've gotten a few other quotes. This is the lower of the three, and it's a company out of Denver that specializes in metal buildings. So, but I'll kind of get that to you. This is kind of a, I'll show you a few pictures of some lighting. The most important ones are probably going to be the ones directly off of the building, like you see on the top of this structure. They're going to go out 100 to 150 feet out in front of the building. So really the flat area kind of gets the original flight of the ball for people to see. Again, this kind of opens us up to having some lighting at later hours. I have 10 on weekdays, 11 on weekends, but I think we would start earlier and see what the feedback is and if we really are needing to be open that late. And the nice thing about this is, as long as we have range balls, I really wouldn't have to have anyone staffed. We would implement a system on the driving range where people could come just tap and pay for range balls. It would kick it out. The lights would be on timers or switches that they could turn off. And at a certain point, everything would shut down throughout the night, and they would kind of head out. We'd obviously have cameras and things there to monitor as well. This is kind of more or less what I would be looking for. Not 100% coverage. Don't think of it as like a sports field. Really just highlighting the targeted areas where we want people to hit. The cool thing about the TrackMan system, it doesn't need light to be able to track the data. It's using radar and LIDAR. It could be pitch black out there, and it will track where this golf ball is going. So it would still be able to pick up all the information that's needed, even if it was pitch dark out there. This kind of gives you an idea where I think we need lights. And I'll try to orient you. So the picture on the left is looking south. So the homes along number one would be on the far left of that image. The poles would be on the left side of the driving range, pointing down and to the right. So really the only thing those homeowners would be able to see is kind of the back side of those lights, and they'd be able to see some visible light going out. But the actual lighting would not be going towards their home. The driving range is so sloped, and this is probably not a great representation of the height, because really that what I have drawn is probably 70-foot poles. We really maybe only need 20, and they would be lower on the hill. My goal would be to keep them as low as possible, so even from their home, unless they're on their back deck, they wouldn't be able to see any of the lights, at least the structures on the range. And then the picture on the right is just looking the other way, off the driving range. And I think I have, maybe I didn't put it in. So those would be on the far east side of the driving range, pointing down. They would kind of cast light down and around the target areas. If any of you have come hit range balls on driving range, you kind of know what I'm talking about, where the targets are kind of a left to right dog leg. We keep them away from the homes. This will be a expensive part of the project, but we are also doing the radars that I mentioned for TrackMan. They have to have two of those poles that go out on the driving range. So we would have a lot of the prep work and the conduit already in place to run lights and power. So it would be less of a cost adding them. This isn't vital to the TrackMan or to the TrackMan or the coverage structure. I wouldn't die on this hill that we have light. It just really ultimately helps us have more operating hours and more revenue on the driving range. So this is another picture. This kind of gives you an idea of how far that light off the top of the structure would go. And then that's more of the galvanized look on the materials, if you're looking at that. So there's a few different technology groups that offer something similar to TrackMan. There's TopTracer that's really popular. The TopTracer is owned by Callaway, who also owns Topgolf. So they have a lot of that same technology. TrackMan does a few things that TopTracer doesn't. TopTracer requires you to have light. So they work less at night than they should. That's why a lot of them, like Topgolf, you have the stadium lights and the sports lights that cover everything. You can do a few more things like playing games. You can actually play golf courses. If you've gone to Topgolf, they have a few games, you know, closest to the pin, hitting them into contests, where this system will actually let you play a number of almost 200 golfers now on the driving range. So you'd set up, you'd hit your driver, you want to play Pebble Beach. Even though you're not hitting it out on a Pebble Beach, it would be tracking as if you were there and you could play different golf courses. And like I mentioned earlier, different contests, tournaments, everything you can run there. It will change what the golf driving range is. Right now we have golfers. We occasionally get some family groups. We occasionally get some kids that come up and try to learn. I think this changes it from being a regular golf course driving range to being more of a family-oriented, event-oriented, fun gathering place, much like Topgolf. So this kind of is a snapshot of what games and programs you can play. We've talked about using some of these, call it Magic Pond, but there's a few other kids' games for all of our junior golf camps and our clinics that we do. You could do long drive contests, things like that. So I won't bore you with all of it. Just an example of an outdoor range without a covered structure has their TrackMan. I just wanted to highlight this golf course in Maine, I believe. Yeah, in Maine. It had a 30% increase in volume, and they only had 12 bays. They gave me a bunch of different case studies on golf courses and what they have, and I took them all with a grain of salt, knowing that they're giving me the best of the best, but I do feel like it would increase our traffic on the driving range. So a part of this project...
Can I ask a question? Maybe you're going to get at it right in here, but you were just talking about... I'm trying to get at, what do you think this does to revenue? Just a sense of it.
I think 40% is, so if we're 150 right now, I think it easily puts us over the 200,000 mark if you're looking at today's dollars and what we're charging. We can charge more for range balls if we have this system in. I'd likely want us to be at the $225,000 range in revenue. This will help cover some of the costs for the TrackMan yearly system that they charge for, and really get us in a good place to maximize revenue.
So like 10 years, it returns itself, something akin to that?
Yeah. Yeah, I would say 8 to 10 years probably return on that investment for it. This is separate from what the project total would be. So this isn't included in it. What TrackMan charges you, much like our GPS units we have on the golf carts, they charge you a yearly fee to use their technology. If this project kind of got the go-ahead, I would bring this back to you for a budget adjustment. It's a seven-year contract. It's $40,000 per year. And it covers everything. So they cover the screens. They cover a replacement at some point in there. Any issues we have, they have a help desk. So it really covers all of their equipment kind of during that time. And I'll get to the cost here. That gives you just an idea where the radars go and where that system looks like, some conduit, how we would run it on the golf course, and what that is would be on the driving range. I'll kind of skip through these so we can get through. So this is a breakdown on what I have for estimated cost. As we just talked about TrackMan, the highlighted in yellow is what would be our cost to do all the prep work for them. They have another option, which is a turnkey model, which they come and do all of their systems. So they'll trench the power, they'll do all of that, and they charge an extra $90,000 to do that work. So I think there's some savings there for us if we use our trencher and our staff, and we do a lot of the manpower for them. I don't estimate it more than being $30,000. We kind of looked at what the conduit would be, what the power would be to run, what fiber would be, and we have some significant savings from having TrackMan bus people in and paying them per diem and a place to stay and things like that. So I've kind of put them in order of expense. So if you look at the cost of the metal structure being $88,000, I do have a couple bids back on concrete. That one was $75,000 and one was $88,000. The metal structure company told me you're looking about the same cost for concrete as you would the cost for the structure. And then they charge $48,000 to install. And I won't go through all of those individually, but it puts us a little bit under that $372,000 cost. And that includes the lighting, which would, I'm estimating about $20,000 for those two poles and those two lights, and the power needed for that as well. I had a timeline on here, but this is not, this is if I got on this pretty quick. But if there's less objections to this and something that we want to still explore, I would bring it back to the City Council in a couple of weeks for final approval. And then kind of get the ball rolling, probably more for spring, depending on availability for concrete and the structure. This isn't a huge rush or need for us to get the project going, other than the bond money we have left over we kind of need to spend at some point without more penalties. Let me go back to...
Does that timeline, does this construction interfere at all with your sledding?
So they're starting November 15th. So I would probably, it's all weather depending, but I would probably not do anything while they're operating. We may be able to do some things Monday through Thursday mornings. A lot of it is going to be myself and other staff doing kind of the prep work for, you know, running conduit and things that we're capable of doing. Really get ready for track man and get ready for electricians to come in and do final connections. But yeah, I would stay away from their operating hours. It would be ideal if we could get the concrete and structure in place before November, because that would allow them to use some of that structure too for people being able to sit under there out of the snow or out of the weather and be in close proximity to the sledding hill. We're going to utilize the deck, but I think that allows them to use that space too as part of their operation. I have more of that in the spring once we kind of have the structure in place and can kind of really get through it. I would propose that I, instead of hiring a full-on company and a contractor to run through everything, I would kind of take this step by step and run it as I'm the general contractor of the project, which I think will help us save some money as well. Getting the right procurement code as far as getting three bids on each of these big items and bring it to the council for approval on some of these bigger project items. So, and some bullet points, what I think it benefits Eaglewood as. And I know I ran through that awfully quick, but I'll leave that up if you have any questions. Ted?
I think this seems cool. And I guess a couple questions. One, ongoing costs, new maintenance costs, etc. Talk about that. And then the other is, and maybe this fits into the revenue question, but how does this change the way that we market the golf course? Does it have an impact on, like, in a positive way, on tournaments or corporate events? I have no idea, you know.
Yeah, to give you an idea, we're spending about $20,000 a year right now to maintain the current grass structure. So there's already a cost for us, and that's just for sand, that's for seed, that's for operations. That's not including how much labor we're charging to pick up the balls. That's always going to be a cost for us to hire staff to pick it up. Really, the only other costs we'll have outside of the track man, $40,000 is going to be electrical and heating. For propane, and those will be, propane will be less so in the summer, obviously, because we're not going to heat, but that will be some March, early season, late season costs. Really, it's going to be electrical. We'll have some initial costs, like I mentioned, with some furniture, but that's kind of all included in there. Really, the only cost I see is electrical to run the equipment, which hopefully will be offset in the need of not having to buy all the sand and seed to keep the grass going. So I think it will kind of offset and not increase our expenses on any side of the driving range. Marketing-wise, I think it gives us an opportunity to market the driving range. You know, right now I wouldn't have any Facebook ads out there, that, even though Bountiful Ridge doesn't have a driving range, to have people come up, hey, come try the Eaglewood driving range. But I think this gives us an opportunity to do that. You know, I would run some Facebook, Instagram ads on, you know, someone hitting on the TrackMan system. This is not a cheap public municipal golf course project. Currently, right now, there's only one other golf course in the state of Utah that has this TrackMan system, and it's the Black Desert Golf Course in St. George. That they've put a lot of money into that golf course. This would be something special that not many other municipal golf courses, A, would be able to fund, but B, be able to afford to do. So I think we're in a good position where we have some bond money left over to do something really different than what other golf courses are doing. So we'd be able to do a lot of marketing and advertising to get people to try it. We've talked about with corporate tournaments, you know, having a 19th hole, so having a contest on the driving range as they're going from 18 to 1, doing long drive and closest to the pin contest, and really we've talked about even doing it selling as an upcharge. You know, if you want to utilize this during your round, it costs X amount of dollars, but I think just having that amenity there will get people excited about coming to Eaglewood. So,
do you want to use it as a family type thing too, or companies to, like, per se, my office? We've gone to Top Golf before and taken our team as a team building opportunity. Is that something you'd
Absolutely.
Like to use as well?
Yeah, we'd want to schedule. It would be generally during the public. We'd have it first come, first serve, unless we're absolutely packed. But we'd want to have bays be companies and events be able to schedule bays for certain amount of times and charge them for that, and, you know, have food and beverage. We've talked. The nice thing about the TrackMan system, it will let you know how many golf balls are hit and when and why and where they're going. And we can kind of tailor that to how we're doing it. So Monday nights, for example, if we're really slow, why don't we do a $20 card for the range and a large pizza and do deals for like family nights and things like that. So we're looking at doing some more programs that will help, similar to what Topgolf's doing, frankly, and doing specials and outings and getting groups to come up. So,
well, I think it would also get people on the golf course that maybe not would ever be up there. So I think it's actually a win for a lot of people.
Yeah, and Ken asked me to get this, and I spaced until you mentioned it. But there's data, and I'll maybe bring it in a couple weeks or even just send it over, that off golf course activities, so for example, Top Golf, miniature golf, simulators, is outpacing, if you can believe it, on golf course activities. So there's more non-golfers coming to do activities like that, so going to Top Golf, going to driving ranges, than they are actually going on the golf course. I wouldn't say it's recession-proof, but it helps a way for us to offset when and if golf course play does decline. We still have these other avenues to be able to capture some revenue from customers. So
I like it a lot, and I like the idea of taking that money and put it into something that generates revenue, as opposed to irrigation systems. Or
yeah, it's not as fun. You don't see it. It's in the ground.
I think it's a great idea. I really do. I think it would be generating a lot of income and interest. And as you say, if we have it and Black Desert has it, that's amazing.
Yeah. Okay. Well, I'll bring it back to you in a couple of weeks for some approval. Hopefully by then I'll have a more, at least on the bigger ticket items, concrete and things, some final numbers and have a good estimate for you kind of moving forward, and then we'll get rolling. Okay.
All right.
Thank you all.
Thanks.
I think we can spend all our time at the golf course.
Yeah.
Yeah. Mayor, I was just going to mention that this presentation was given to the golf committee. And they felt, I'll let you, maybe a council member, talk about it, but they felt very supportive of this and felt like it was the right direction for the remaining bond funds. So I just wanted to mention that.
Okay, next. Next item is approval of the city council minutes of July 16th. I don't believe I had any changes to it. I always appreciate reading the minutes and Wendy making me sound nicer than I was. I was saying things or
Appreciate that, Wendy.
I have one, I don't know, it's tiny. On line 149, we say a standalone committee, and I don't know if that's one word or not. Standalone. Maybe we could say they have events as a, she felt it's important to have events as its own committee. Just say that. That would be better, probably.
If Bruce Oblad was here, he would tell us what it should be.
As always, the minutes are first rate, so I'll make the motion to approve the minutes for the city council meeting, opening work session, and the meeting for July 16th, 2024, with the minor amendment.
So I'll second it.
Thank you. Any further comment? All in favor say aye.
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 Any opposed? Those minutes are approved. Thank you. Wendy, you got Suzette was on too, right? Next item is the action item list.
Are there any notable changes to the action item list that staff would like to highlight from our last meeting? Like, hey, you ought to notice that X or Y have shifted in status.
Sorry. I'm sorry, Wendy was talking to me. Can you ask that question again? I just did not hear you.
Well, just on the action items, if there's any notable changes.
Oh, thank you for repeating that. We have added some commentary, but we have not made significant changes. There are there's one item that has been moved to the completed list. Item 36 at the very end was completed, and we've made some additional notes, but there are not many changes on this time. Yes. Yeah, there's dates, but any of the comments on the far right have a date when they were written, so.
I have a quick question on one action item. It talks about an app for railroad crossing times, which an app is probably overly ambitious. I'm not even sure how that would come about. But I'm wondering what needs to happen and maybe what has happened and what the response has been as far as approaching the two railroads and their response on sending a schedule, a daily schedule. I'm assuming they have a daily schedule they operate by, and them sending a schedule to us so that we could just at least post it on those electric signs. I was going to Parks and Arts meeting last week, I think, and I was delayed by 15, 20 minutes at one of the railroad crossings. And I know that that's just one of a thousand times that people want to swear in their car. So I'm just wondering, is that even a doable action item, and how has that been received by the railroad companies?
I think we should absolutely pursue schedules. We have discussed that with Union Pacific and with Big West Oil in the past, and they have been they've not been super cooperative in providing a reliable schedule, particularly Union Pacific will not commit to a schedule on a regular basis. But I think it's worth asking the question. With respect to the app, we actually have looked at some other communities that have rail running through their cities, and there are some technologies out there that we've looked at, and will this is the idea of an app is it's not going to be a fast solution, but it can be an effective solution, and we're looking at different technologies. And so I think this is still a good it's a good action item. I would certainly, we can add the idea of outreach to the rail operators to try to get better coordination and better scheduling, or maybe there's a way for them to participate in an app by regularly putting information in the app on when and where trains will be crossing.
You know, in my mind, more important than when they're coming is how long.
Yeah.
You know, you get stopped for a train and it may be 5 minutes or maybe 30.
Yes.
And if the guy loading cars could just go in and type in and say, we estimate 25-minute wait, you know, we could all flip UEs and go somewhere
else.
Yeah,
I think, as I observe, and not to make this longer than it should be, but there are three types of trains. There's the front-runner train, which is very fast. There's regular Union Pacific trains, which don't stop here, but they also don't go quickly through the area and may contain 100 cars or slightly more than that, and they can take a long time. But the longest delays, in my observation, is Big West Oil, which is really moving oil cars back and forth, switching tracks to get product in and out of the refinery, and they seem to have the least amount of regard for how long they're taking, for how long they're closing the street. So I think those sorts of things are all important to put into maybe an electronic noticing system. So we've also talked, in addition to an app, of perhaps signage that you see on the freeway that tells you whether I-80 going up to Park City is blocked, or I-80 out west is closed, or it's high winds, or some of those warnings you see on the freeway. And I think that if we're successful, we should be able to, in addition to an app, come up with a warning system on Highway 89 or north of Center Street or out at 11th North, to try to alert people before they get trapped into those east-west streets so that they can make decisions about moving around. So we're looking at all of those things.
I almost think that a sign would be the first course of action. They might coincide and come at the same time, but citizens that are going up and down, residents going up and down, would definitely want to get their hands on the app. But just people who don't frequent those roads as much may not even know about the app, but they would see signs. And so I think the signs would be more effective in alerting everyone, where maybe only some people would know about the app and download the app. I think both are wonderful. I think those electric signs like we see on the freeways would be, in my mind, the first course, just because it would hit everyone. But I'm wondering, what is the reasoning behind the hesitancy? They just don't consider it a good use of their time, and they aren't required, so they are not wanting to play ball with this, or they don't themselves run a real accurate schedule that they have at the beginning of every day, or what is the
I think it's more the latter. I think that local operators are less in control of the scheduling than we think, and so in fact Union Pacific will tell you that all the scheduling originates in the Midwest, and it sort of feeds out across North America, and it's very difficult. They have told us it's very difficult to predict or change or provide accurate information specifically. And I think Big West Oil is subject to Union Pacific for delivery of oil cars and that sort of thing. So there is some regularity, I think, that we could explore, because it seems to me that we have times during the day, like there's a morning closure, it seems, most days, most weekdays, and there's an afternoon closure or two, which we could try to be better at predicting. But as far as those operators, they just won't, they will not commit to a schedule and stick to a schedule.
Mayor, I've got another one. Item 25. This is in regard to the completion of the Highway 89 corridor agreement. As you see in the note, it says the goal is to complete that by September 1 of this year. Of course, that's just in 3 weeks. The note says Allie's been asked to set up a meeting, can we get an update from Karen, Sherry, or
yes,
Ken? Could be next meeting or mm-hmm. the following meeting. I think next meeting would be great. As a note, I won't be at the next meeting.
Okay. Well, we can update the council outside of meetings too. So
great.
I will chase that one down. I think that we are, I think we could be ready to bring a draft agreement to the council soon on that one.
So. Awesome.
I have one that was just kind of raised its head again, and that is item number. Which one is it now? Discussion on time, place, manner, First Amendment. Item 35. It was supposed to have happened in June when the new council members came in, so it's probably time in light of recent events.
Thanks. We think we have it scheduled for September 3rd, which, if that's okay with everybody. It's okay with our presenter.
Yeah.
So he's committed to that. Thanks for bringing that up.
Anything else on action? Let's move to council reports. Ted?
Wendy, I sent you an email. It's okay. It's all right. All right. It's okay. The reason why I sent Wendy an email is to pull up a map and for me to just speak over for my report. But what this map shows is a draft bike corridor that WFRC has pulled together. Yes, I'm a dual hat wearer. But this is related to the creation of a high quality, high safe, high comfort bike route one through Davis County. And it has a couple of different route options in it. One is on 1100 West through West Bountiful, coming up our main street and then onto Highway 89. The other is like 200 West in Bountiful, okay, you follow me, mm-hmm. and then it comes over to Highway 89. They both come through Highway 89 in North Salt Lake. One comes up Main and then onto Highway 89. If you zoom into North Salt Lake, you'll see these two options. Here's where I'm headed. There's a couple of ways that this might unfold. There's a few ways this might unfold. But this kind of improvement, it really only makes sense if it goes through more than one community. If it's a North Salt Lake only improvement, it makes way less sense. If it happened to go all the way to Farmington, you could imagine it became a really high value, really valued amenity in our county. Those are big differences. I think that, the Utah Trail Network, UDOT, they might advance one of these corridors. Another avenue is that we could reach out to these communities, Bountiful at least, and maybe Bountiful, Centerville, and Farmington, and say, do you want to study this? We're not going to make a decision like this without more information. Shall we take a look at design options and cost and just get our arms around what this might mean and look like? I think most of the modifications are actually not in North Salt Lake. They would be in other communities. But what I'm wondering is, what do you think about that? That's a question both for council and staff. What do you think about that idea? And then if you think there's merit in that, we could just start doing informal reach outs, or you could do city manager to city manager reach outs. Not sure.
So Ted, we're looking, so the green is existing?
Yeah,
and the yellow is proposed?
Yeah, and if you pan so that I can see further north, here's kind of the big idea. You see that green segment that dead ends right there. No, yes, south. You're on the right path south. Keep going south. There you go. So that is the DNRG trail, and it just unceremoniously stops. So the 1100 West would be like, hey, you're on the DNRG, you could continue on 1100 West and then get back on a trail, essentially, on Highway 89. That's the concept there. The 200 West concept would be kind of a new facility. Calling a spade, Bountiful has just always been sort of lukewarm on this kind of stuff. Which I can't totally figure out, because if you go counselor to counselor, it seems like they like this kind of stuff, but it just never seems to get any traction. But at least we could ask the question. An alternative is this information would get shared with UDOT, and they might choose to advance it as a state project, which I actually think has pretty good possibility. The sort of the up and the downside is, as communities, we have much less control.
So, do you mind if I ask you a question?
Yeah, go ahead.
About this, do you envision that these new facilities are permanent bike lanes of some type, or do you have a? Facility improvement in mind?
Yeah, I think that's what we could come out of a study is,
yeah,
let's put a little bit of detail to this, mm-hmm. But I think the idea is something that would have some physical protection, at least in portions where you could do it.
I see.
Maybe you don't do that everywhere because you have some constraints here or there, but you would generally try to provide some physical protection for a bicyclist. Okay.
That's helpful.
I mean, this might be the kind of thing we need to put on an agenda, but I think the idea of just asking WFRC for study money, we could probably do that, and that just gives us more information. I don't know if you have a recommendation, Ken, on this.
So I think getting money to study these options is a great idea. And I think, if I'm hearing you correctly, having the participation of affected communities going in all together is the best way to do it, and I agree. So if the council's okay, I can talk to the other communities about that idea, maybe putting an application together to get some funding to look at these corridors.
Amen. And it's just to repeat the pitch to them is, this is not a commitment to the project. It's a, let's come together and study it together.
Yep.
And I think, Ken, going to other city managers is the fastest way to get it all done.
Yeah.
The question, we had a meeting, remember, we all met in, I believe, David, in Bountiful City?
Yeah.
Wasn't this the same?
This is the direct outgrowth of
That's right. And it seemed to me that we drew a map that was going to go somewhere west. Bountiful was going to go west. That was what everybody recommended or something.
What happened from that meeting is that a variety of ideas were looked at, and then the WFRC staff went to each community, including ours, and they said, we've done a little bit of refinement work. Can we get your feedback? And so what you're looking at here is first pass that the meetings you talked about, second pass individual meetings with each community, including Bountiful and Centerville and Farmington and us. And now that's why I think it has some legs.
Okay. Anything else, Ted? Lisa?
I have a couple things. I, along with the mayor, attended the public safety meeting with regard to the fire issue that we had. It was very informative. I think there was a good turnout, and we received a lot of information. It is interesting to note, I learned one thing, and that is a mandatory evacuation is not literally mandatory. I was fascinating to find out that if they issue that and people refuse to go, then the fire department and city staff or whoever goes to them and says, okay, give us your name, your birth date, your dental records information, and so forth, just in case we have to find who you are after the tragedy.
That should give them pause, I would think.
Yeah.
You know?
But apparently that's the way they handle it. I find that interesting. But it was also interesting to find out that the Sandhurst storm wasn't caused by what I had presumed was somebody that was playing with matches, so to speak, but it was by wires that sparked and hit against each other with the windstorm. One thing I'm thinking maybe I want to ask about, and I don't know, maybe I'm being a little persnickety on this, but if you could remind me what it was we decided when we had One Kind Act come to our city and make a presentation. Didn't we say we support the idea, we think it's a great thing to do? But did we say yes, put signs all over our city property?
What we did is that we adopted a resolution that has several statements in it about supporting those efforts. It did not mention One Kind Act today. Subsequent to that meeting, the mayor and I met with that group, and they asked us if they could put signage around the city, and we said yes.
And there's signage in individual yards, I'm noticing now, too, in businesses.
Well, I'm sure of that, but I didn't know that.
Yeah.
And I remember when we approved this, I had some hesitation about it because we didn't mention it by One Kind Act today. But if you look outside of the city here, City Hall, there's at least three or four signs. I don't know, they have an endless supply. I don't know, I'm not taking them down, but they seem to be everywhere. And I wish I had been informed that we had given them permission. That's all I'm saying.
Oh, one other thing.
There's a program in Utah called A Bolder Way Forward. It's a program that is trying to become a sounding board and thinking tank for problems that are faced by women and children in the state of Utah. We have very bad rankings for what gender gap and sexual assault, sexual abuse of girls in particular. And I was wondering if I could have time on the agenda to come and make a presentation on that, not unlike what we did with One Kind Act today. Thank you.
Sure. Okay. Tammy?
I don't have anything except for I wanted to give a thank you to Sherry for getting scooters for us for the parade a couple weeks ago, and for everybody for their participation. I thought it was fun. And
hey, and thank you too, Tammy. You did a lot of work on that, and it was fantastic.
Oh, you're welcome. And you won't hear anything more from me about the parade until probably next July. But I also have the receipt for the taffy. Do I give that to you, Wendy? Okay, so thank you for that. I think it was a fun day.
Thank you. That reminds me, I have green bags in my car that I need to bring in that are Elisa's.
Go ahead and put them in Elisa's.
Yeah. Suzette, do you have anything?
Not much. I am in Coeur d'Alene, Idaho, which I've never been here before, and I'm tagging along on a business trip of my husband's, and you guys will probably all laugh, everyone in the room, because I'm new to this, but I can't help it now. Every time I go to a city, I see everything through these city glasses now. I look at what businesses were approved and how the streets look and the zoning and what kind of mixed residential use there is. And I look at the public buildings and the parks And it's slightly annoying and very educating because I can't see any place now without seeing it through city council eyes. And I do have to say that they have a fabulous city building attached to a huge city park and all of the bells and whistles. And it really got me excited thinking about this new Hatch Park right across the street from our city buildings. I got so excited, I sent a few pictures to David in an email just saying, this is a good idea, this might be fun. And he was probably rolling his eyes as well, but very kind about it. But it just really made me appreciate the city staff and city council and city government, because truly, that is what makes this city of Coeur d'Alene so beautiful. And I really think we have an opportunity, an exciting opportunity with Hatch Park to do the same thing, to really beautify our city. And I paid attention to the retail and the small restaurants and a little bakery that they had around the city park as well. I think there's just a lot of neat opportunity. And so it made me very excited for a lot of the agenda items that we have coming up. So I just wanted to share that we too could be a small mini Coeur d'Alene, Idaho.
All right, thank you. All right, let's go ahead and take a quick break before we start a regular session.